November, a huge investigative story hit the news, namely the Panama Papers, you may recall that, and they revealed how big companies like Apple or people with power and money use offshore, the offshore tax industry to evade taxation. That's why this talk is important, because Vavoida is here now from the Open Knowledge Foundation, who will explain to you everything you need to know about international taxation and why this should concern you as hackers. Please give an applause to Vavoida. Thanks.
Yeah, good morning, Leipzig, and thank you for having me here so early. And I will try to make this talk, although the topic is like really dry and boring, as exciting as it can be for taxation. So I work for the Open Knowledge Foundation. I do normally open data policy and transparency stuff. And I will present today why taxation is a perfect two-word issue, and it's a worldwide two-word issue, and how it connects to internet, CCC and technology, and also how we shape the society with it. So how we got here, I'm from Austria. Normally I have two colleagues with me. That's Max Kasi and Daniela Platsch from Vienna and Harvard University. And we're trying to change something in that area. And the talk will have three parts. So it's like the status quo, intro, and fun examples, how you make tax loops working for your company. Then the second part is why is that, the policy and the history, and the third one is then what you can do about it, politics and the future. So I got into the topic reading about an article about ExxonMobil, which is the sixth largest company in the world by market cap and revenue, and especially ExxonMobil Spain. So they had like 2009 and 2008, one employee earning 44K a year and making 9.9 billion net profits in these 2 years. So to understand this, that's like a factor of 112,000 from his income to the profit for the company. And I was like, well, that's basically like this John Doe from Spain is the Stakhanov of capitalism. There's nobody else probably in the world who is outperforming this guy for 2 years. And that's basically just done through like making use of tax holes. So the takeaway is like some corporations pay not so much corporate taxes, and it's a lot of dough. In Germany, we say it's a Batzen Geld. And at the end of the day, if you have a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. And other people say there are only two things for certain in life, that's death and taxes. But we would like to add that's like a third certain in life, and that's inequality. And while some discussing about reducing the taxes, we also want to talk about like reducing the inequality, and this will be the talk about. And where everybody can agree on it, it's like the tax rates are too damn high. But you should also consider that taxes are always helping funding public goods like schools, transportation, and so on. So in German, you have like Steuern. It's like what kind of society you want to have and how to contribute it versus to pay for it, in which direction we are moving. If you see that, it's like basically you get tax being input and you want to achieve social goals or like stimulate economic growth with them. So the formula basically is if you have a tax revenue at the top, if CT, for example, the company pays less taxes, then somebody else has to pay more taxes, or you have less tax revenue to fund those public goods. And this talk will mainly about like the legal optimization. There's a lot of illegal stuff going on, like in Germany, with like the Cumex tax evasion, which is Steuerhinterziehung or Betrug, which adds up to 12 billion. Or you have then like the regular Swiss tax fund in Germany, like in NRW, it's like 1.8 billion, where also like says Swiss spy got caught finding the leak for in Germany. And there's the famous quote from Barack Obama from 2016, where he said, but all of this is legal, but that's exactly the problem. So we basically say legal, illegal, scheißegal. We're living in a time where we need to discuss about that because we have basically, as Andreessen Horst had said, software is eating the world. So either AI, robots may eat the jobs or not. And we're in a round of discussion, should we have like a universal basic income or outcome? And this is the trend which is unique. So you have like the last decades, like basically two download slopes. That's like the trend of corporate income tax as share of GDP. And that's like the tax rate by itself. And that's like causing some issues. So the corporate tax rate's basic rule is that the less profit, the less taxes you pay, and you try to pay the taxes where the tax rate is lower. So when you're thinking about that, and since we're here, you can always thinking about like hacking the tax code. And you have like your hackers working 24/7 for the four big accounting firms, which would be PricewaterhouseCoopers, Ernst & Young, KPMG, and Deloitte. And not only like they are hacking actively, some of them are also making like the smart move and are writing backdoors. That means like they are like involved in the process of writing the tax code, the law, where they later will exploit it. So there's a lot of cyber going on, a lot of dough for the US. That means like there's $2 trillion US dollars overseas, and annually there's like around 60 billion adding on top of it. For the European Union, we are talking about somewhere around 50 to 70 billion a year. Like where I come from, that's like a sixth of the schnitzel of Austria, or that's like another Batzen is like 10 Berlin airports. And the OECD calls it in a Bayes erosion price shifting report a reaches. There's other reports like from taxjustice.net saying that's up to like 500 billion annually. And why this is happening, that's basically part of it increased in the last decades because we're moving from an economy really based on real goods to intangible goods. And that means like patents, trademarks, and so on. And you can see that really nicely in how the top five market cap changed from 2006 to 2017. So you had like 2006, you had like ExxonMobil, General Electric, Microsoft, British Petrol, and Citigroup, which means banking, energy, and industry. And then 11 years later, you have like basically like five tech companies. And those tech companies, the valuable stuff they're doing, like software code and so on, can easily like jump from one server to the other compared like if you have like a BP, like an oil refinery. So that's like makes it way easier to move something around if it's just digital. And the most famous tax loophole was the double Irish Dutch sandwich. And that's basically what you need for that. You always need like two Irish companies. Then you need a Dutch company, then you need like a company somewhere in the Bermudas or what you call like an offshore financial center, and you transfer them the money around. So there's like the Chinese version because it doesn't matter much. It's just about the flag. So you start like somewhere in the US, then you have like some offshore company who holds like the patents or the intellectual property stuff, which gives it to one Irish company. And basically you go then to another Irish company who has here like sales to the customers. So the customers are paying in here. Then they pay like some money to the Netherlands company, then they pay the money to the Irish company, then the Irish company pays it to the Bermuda company. Same stuff you have here, like a little bit more detailed, and it's the same stuff like going around here. So it's always basically two Irish companies, one Dutch company, some company in a tax haven. And in that process, what is happening, it really reduced the corporate tax rate to almost like nothing. And that's basically a trend among the big companies. Pretty much everyone does it. So it's Microsoft, Apple, Google, Facebook, Amazon, Starbucks, also the German company SAP or Inditex, which is the Spanish clothing company. And I want to point out one example. It's Google. So basically, Google has worldwide revenue in 2014 of 46 billion. And when you take it down to the UK, it's like a tenth of it, it's 4.6 billion. And on this profit of 10 billion annually worldwide, they paid somewhere around 2.3 billion. But in the UK, they only paid like 30 million. And that's because they're using like this Dutch Irish sandwich to pay less profits on the revenue in the UK. And then when you take a look like where Google got famous in Europe lately, which is the Digital News Initiative, that's like 150 million they're using to spend on news organization. That's what they basically can call them like peanuts. Because that's basically less than what they save in 1 year just on the tax paying in the UK alone. Same goes with Apple. So Apple is sitting right now on a cash of pile of 250 billion, and it's partly due because the same system, or they had like a tax rate of just 0.005% 2014. To put that in relation, it's like two-thirds of a schnitzel, the GDP of Austria of like 8 million people, or two-thirds of the debt of Greece, or twice the GDP from Berlin, or 50 airports. And so the European Commission wanted to force Ireland to tax Apple higher, but of course they refused it because that's partly their business model, taking less corporate taxes. And the tap was last year 18 billion, and by December 17th, Ireland was forced to collect 13 billion from Apple because it's like about competition. We will see how that ends up. I hope somebody collects that. And 2014, Ireland was scraping their infamous double Irish tax sandwich loophole, and everybody was like, woohoo, finally. But then they also replaced at the same time called something like patent box or knowledge development box. So it's a similar stuff, a different name, and a little bit less dodgy, but it will keep like tech companies and pharmaceutical companies ongoing doing their tax scheme. Another great example is an investment opportunity from Switzerland, Hungary, and the Netherlands. So that was General Electric on the 21st of December 2015 at 12 o'clock. The Dutch sold the General Electric Swiss to Hungary for like 40,000 francs. An hour later, they sold it again in different direction for 6.4 billion. So that's like 60 minutes, a factor of 167,500. In order to understand that, that's like you upgrade your old modem to a 6 gigabit line, or you upgrade your floppy disk to a 230 gigabit hard drive. Or you work only 1.5 hours in your whole life. And that's why it happened. It's basically they were selling some rights for 8 billion, and with the tax difference from Hungary to Switzerland, instead of paying 18% taxes, they only paid 2% taxes, saving 1.4 billion Swiss francs in 1 hour. And there are many more examples like that, especially from Luxembourg. Madeira is like a European island tax haven. IKEA has a hilarious tax example, but I don't want to bore you, and I want to go quickly through what happened on the reporting side. So 2013, there was offshore leaks, which was the first bigger reporting addressing that issue. Then a year later, you had like LuxLeaks addressing Luxembourg. Interesting there was like it happened right after Juncker was like getting the head of the European Commission. You can read that up in the German Diplocables. The slides are online and it's everything linked. And it was like about 28,000 pages on like more than 500 ruling on companies, how to get like special deals in Luxembourg. And then you have to understand why this is important. So every country in Europe basically is trying to lower the corporate tax rate in order to attract the businesses. And he is now head of the European Union, which exactly should avoid that. And 2016, 2 years after the reporting, there was actually 4 times more special deals in Luxembourg. Then we had the Panama Papers. That was done or made available by a whistleblower. We don't know who it is, John Doe. The reporting started 2016, and it was mainly about Mossack Fonseca, which like was one of the service providers. It was the biggest leap in data journalism, 11 million documents, and 2.6 terabytes. And one of the consequences, or not consequence, was happened afterward. That was like the 16th of October this year in Malta, where Daphne Caruana Galizia, her car got bombed. And then in November, the Paradise paper came. Same, like almost similar to Panama Papers. Difference was in different company. It was Applebee. And it was like a 19 tax jurisdiction, and it was like high profile cases. So these leaks and papers are tremendous work, really amazing, and I think it helps a lot of moving the discussion forward. I just want to remark it, the systematic blaze behind it were known before that. So it's, I would say it's like, don't hate the player, hate the game, or hate the enablers. And the enablers are literally like those who are writing the law or like politicians. So to sum it up, that's like a lot of dough, but some geld, and we're going to the second part, how did that happen? So over the last century, we had basically 3 deals how to get taxes done. That was like source country based, arm's length pricing, and bilateral treaties. So by source country based, it means like you tax where the production is happening. So if you have a car company in Germany, it just happens there. Arm's length pricing, when it's getting more complicated, you have a car company buying parts from Austria, then it means like you have two separate units and you price them where they are. So what you need there, and that's important, is like you have to find out a price. And that finding out a price, paying for the Austrian company, if it's like a regular product, like a some car, but it's easy because you have a market on there, and you can't make up the margins like 10 or 100 times more. If you do it with digital stuff, the question is like, who knows how much is the Google algorithm worth? So you can't price this because there's no market on it. The same goes with trademarks. One famous case was like the Nike swoosh. So with real goods, if you have competitors, you know what the pricing will be. With tangible goods, it's difficult to figure it out. So they're treating the national subsidiaries as independent companies and making market prices for this. So then we're moving, why these are the problems? So basically, on the source country-based corporations can move their production from A to B. Let's say you have a car company, you can produce in Poland cheaper than in Germany, then you move the production over there. So arm's length pricing, you can make up the prices and shifting profits around. That's basically the case what happened with Google and the Bermudas. So out of nowhere, Google headquarter for like algorithmic stuff is in the Bermudas. And then the third is bilateral treaties. And on bilateral treaties, you pay a bunch of lawyer really good money to figure it out how to exploit the different tax treaties. That would be the case with the double Irish-Dutch sandwich. And so we have then two scenarios, which adds up to a third, making prices to shift profits via accounting, move the actual production. And now that the kicks in, the really big part is like it leads to tax competition between countries, because you want to attract those companies. And that's basically leads to this graph where you see like from the 90s to 2016, we have different countries, Germany, Ireland, France, lowering the corporate tax rate. So Germany started out with 60, ending up with 30 here. Ireland was once up at 50 and is now at 12%. So that's the business model, attracting US companies and getting less corporate taxes compared to their European neighbors. Same goes with the US, used to be stable a long time. There's also like the difference between a statutory corporate tax rate and the effective. The effective is lower, that's basically what you really pay. And since we got a new president in the US, you can see like this is the historic chart from 1980 till like a century. It used to go up before and after the Second World War, then it was stable a long time, and in December it was announced that it will go from 35 down to 22. So you have like then an international competition for tax rate. So the question is like, what can be done about that? And one of the proposals, among others, is like you put something in like a sales-based apportionment tax. That means like you require from the multinational companies that they report the global profit and sales and taxing in the country. You multiply the global profits and by the share of the global sales happening in that country which want to tax, and then you tax the percentage of this number. The question is, how can we get there, or what we can do about that? Well, one thing is you can always pray about and pray that praying will help changing tax structures, or you can laugh about it when you remember like ExxonMobil, Starbucks, IKEA. The picture came from regular economics because that's part of the problem, because they told us it will trickle down. And what means trickle down is like one of the most important things in my opinion is like you're realizing what trickling down means. And that's basically when you take a look at this chart, so like in the 1980, it started like you see like the change in share of income. So you have like the top 1%, a gain of like 120%, then you have like the top 20%, raising a little bit like above 25%, and everybody else is losing out. That means that. And the other chart for that is like you have from 45 to 0.5 the productivity gains, and it used to align like pretty much up like with real wages. So everybody got their fair share of that. But somewhere here, it's split it ways. So you have like productivity gains, but the real wages are stagnant. So you should ask yourself, what happened to this pie? Where did it go? And so this also leads them to create two classes, like those working for this company, taking the share out of it, which is not always the case if you take a look at, for example, workers leaving the Googleplex. They also have like two different working classes, and those who are not. And remember, this like adds up to almost like 100 euro per each European citizen each year on a conservative estimate. And that brings back like everybody's complaining about like the governments don't have money anymore. But if you add that up, you get like since the financial crisis roughly around 5%. So you would have in instead of 90% debt GDP ratio, only 85%. So when you go to offshore wells, the estimates from Zuckmann, which I only can recommend, he's like a student of Piketty, who made that calculation based on the Panama Papers, that on average you have like 10% of the GDP hiding in the tax havens. Germany, for example, is like right here with around, I think it was somewhere 15. You have Spain with somewhere around 10, and then you have Greece, which is striking out at 35 or something like that. And why this is important? Because normally the discussion right now is like about some tax havens sitting somewhere on some islands. But as you can see here, you'll be talking about Switzerland, Hong Kong, USA, Singapore. On the sixth place you have, or on the fifth place, sixth place you have then Luxembourg, and on eighth you have Germany. So the framing of the only effects like this tax havens on some small island, I would say it's not completely correct. Here you can see the difference score. So Panama on this chart from Tax Justice Network only comes in at number 13, and you have like Switzerland, Hong Kong. So this is basically the problem you have to attack. It's not so much about like this completely dark money laundering, illegal money. It's like a lot of stuff happens like right in your face, known to everybody for decades. So although the leaks were amazing, it was nothing new. And you have like other cases like in Germany, like Cum-Ex, which are around like for more than 15 years, and nothing is changing. And that's the sharing of the tax havens, given started out with Switzerland, which used to be number one, now Asian tax havens coming up. But the issue is like you have still like above 30 or around 30% European tax havens. And why this is important? Because some countries try to do something about it, and when they do something, there's this case with the Ukraine, where the people in Ukraine trying to find out where their money went, they got stuck in Germany because we couldn't provide them the information because you don't have like beneficial ownership in Germany. There's an initiative called Open Ownership trying to solve that. And that's like once you have a weakest link where you block information, know who is the owner of the company, you can't get any further. So this one has to be addressed. And positive note, es tut sich etwas, a bissel. So there's like some progress going on December the 70th. There's a new anti-money laundering directive from the European Commission. That was the first step after the Panama Papers. Basically, it means that all those company registered in Europe has to be within the next 18 months making entry in a registry which is available to the public. That's good in one way. Again, it's not addressing like those companies like Apple because it's like legal. Another step would be like the European Parliament elections 2019. And you have to remember, this is a political question. So years ago, when we had like the Eurozone crisis, Mario Draghi, Super Mario, the head of the ECB, stepped up and basically said, whatever it takes, we will fix it. And I think for taxation, that needs to be done as well. And basically, we need structural reforms that we avoid like having a situation like this again, that I'm okay, I'm landed on the taxpayer. And one part of that, it's like a framing issue. You should see it like paying the taxes when they're spent well as a positive thing. And in the United States, there was a long discussion about if you call a tax death tax or estate tax. The conservatives label it as a death tax because then you frame it better, badly, and on a person who is dying. And the opposite way would be like it's estate tax because the person is gone, some is left over, and it's about contribution to the society. Another thing is like this whole shit is like really boring, and I'm really sometimes think it's part of it, like it's boring and complicated to keep you falling asleep. So you should get familiar with certain things like too big to jail when it comes to justice. I will be gone, you will be gone, like how incentives are split up in banking sector. And one stuff I always recommend is The Big Short. It's like a movie about the financial crisis, which I think is brilliantly done and explains the things which normally sounds like really complicated, completely easy. And you should have a Europe, a world which exists in the practice of tax solidarity and not at the purpose of tax optimization itself. And when you remember the opening keynote from C. Strauss, he called like old slow AIs corporations. And I think it would be easier to regulate those corporations on a tax level compared to a tech level, because the framing and the time, it's not that crucial. Which led me to the one quote, when you have corporations or people, why don't we have a corporate death penalty for companies? And that was the case with Mylan, that was the Equihex data leak and insider trading this fall. So we have a certain responsibility to be there successful, because there's no alternative. And just want to say, remember, this isn't rocket science. It used to be there and see it like as net neutrality. We need a level playing field for global corporations to like local companies or mini shops, because they basically pay nothing, and so you divide up the problem. And while you have net neutrality, it's the speed or what you can transport. Here it's the just like the DFM, easier money flow. And so come to the end, and that's like the idea is like solar punk taxation. Solar punk is like something. How does a sustainable civilization look like, and how can we get there? And I think taxation is probably one thing we will be stuck in the near future. So we think should think about it to have like these two scales lined up, so we end up in a nice sustainable civilization. So the takeaway is like things changing because of intangible goods and technology. Three ways are companies pay less taxes. Somebody probably has to pay up, take up the bill. It's more than 0.5% of the European GDP. And that was me. Remember the logo and tighten the tax screws firmly. That was it. Thank you so much. Yeah, the slides are online, and if you have any questions after or next to the Q&A, you just contact me at Favoida or walter@sing.net.
We have time for very few questions. If you have one and want to be lucky to be one of those, please line up at the microphones. But please, Signal Angel, are there any questions from the internet? Yes, they are. Go ahead.
How will universal basic income deal with too big to fail? As in, how will we deal with a company who does bad, yet we are so dependent on their contribution to universal basic income that we can't punish them in any meaningful way?
Can you maybe rephrase the question?
How do you see the universal basic income in connection with the too big to fail phenomena?
Well, I think the too big to fail phenomenon is one thing. You normally, at a certain level, you should split up company. That was done to the telcos years ago, to oil companies years ago. And when you, once you come to the situation that you have too big to fail, then you basically, in game theory, they have a leverage. We have seen that in banks. You couldn't let them go down, because if they would have go down, that would be a systematic risk, and you couldn't bear that risk. That would be my answer to that, independently from universal basic income.
We go, since we started a little bit later, we go until 5 past, so we have time for, I see how the questions fit in. Microphone number 2, please.
Hello, I have 2 questions. there's now alternative to Bitcoin called Zcash and Monero. And the advantage of those two cryptocurrencies is that it's basically untraceable compared to Bitcoin. So my question is, in the future, if many more companies are going to adopt this untraceable cryptocurrency and start paying, for example, the employees with it, how are you going to manage to tax those people or corporations? And the second question is, a more reflection on the state of the European Union. The EU was created and has opened the borders in 1992. And I'm part of a region from south of Belgium, where everybody goes to Luxembourg to fetch their gas because it's cheaper. And it's still the case, because we do have different member states that has very different fiscal laws that and at the EU level, there's no legislation. As in the US, there's no legislation to harmonize those fiscal laws. And it's actually a unanimity
topic. I'm sorry, what is your question? You asked one question and maybe you answered that. So we don't have a lot of time, so...
In the US, there's no fiscal... There's fiscal competition between the states, the same is in Europe, and I don't see with unanimity in the Council of Ministers that it's going to change in the near future. What you mentioned earlier, Luxembourg, Malta, Holland, apparently blocked this 17 December initiative. So I don't see with unanimity, like at some point, one country like Luxembourg say, fuck off, and then we can't make any progress.
So the first question with cryptocurrencies, I think the leverage on the state, like, so basically you have company A and that company decides to go to Zcash and making their transactions anonymously, good luck with that, because then basically the tax system strikes back. I don't think there's, like, unless you want to go completely underground, there's no chance that you can avoid that. Maybe they have certain advantages from the speed when they implement it, but you will not be able to provide the books you need for a tax audit. And then they get you on something else. If they want to get you, they always get you, even if everything else is fine. And the second one, yes, the European has a competition. The question is how far you want to let the competition go. And that's the same thing with Juncker. I mean, Juncker did a phenomenal job for Luxembourg when he was their finance minister and premier minister, but it hurt like other countries. So at the end of the day, what you do in politics, you have to find a solution together how you deal with it. The first step is that Ireland has to basically being forced to take the money from Apple because it's like not fair competition to everybody else. I mean, and that's a question the society has to ask you. You can go down to zero corporate tax if you say that you don't need it. There's some people arguing for that. And at the end of the day, somebody has to pay the bill, or you basically say you privatize everything and you don't want to have a government. That's like a, on the one side. There may be a middle ground. You have to find a solution how you make your revenue. And this is one part where you clearly see a trend that the revenue from that area goes down and maybe has some implications. I mean, we're living in Europe, which is halfway falling apart, and partly because of that reason, because with erosion of the tax base, and at the end of the day, other people getting blamed for that, which they didn't cause. So, as I said, it's a political question.
I'm sorry, we ran up with our time. Microphone one. You can reach for Voida by Twitter or by email if you have further questions.
I will be around here after the talk.
I'm sorry?
I will be around here if you...
Yeah, so you can go directly to him and ask him. Thank you for coming here for this talk. And please give a warm round of applause to Voida. Thank you very much.